I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
You're listening to After Law, broadcasting from the beautiful South Burnham. Accept no substitute.
Hello, dear listeners. Welcome to the denouement of this strange, strange season. Joining me to kick around the possibilities, probabilities, the endless permutations, or not so endless permutations of the weekend and the following week's events, are my two compadres. On the one hand, it's Mr. Michael Avery. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Monge two, Rodney. Monge two. I was going along with your French fame, Nick.
And all the way from Le Mans in his dreams. Mr. Harry Warren, how you doing, mate?
I just turn around and say "merde," which is basically French for shit, isn't it? or fuck. I can't remember which one, but it's yes. That's pretty much what we were all saying with the Birmingham result. Merde.
We were hoping listeners to bring a bit of star quality with Mr. Aaron Paul, fresh from the EFL award show, hobnobbing with the stars, but he's been called away to a work meeting, so he can't make it. So I'm afraid it is we band of brothers, Michael, Harry and myself. Chaps, this is a strange weekend. I mean, Saturday's game and I think the Bournemouth away trip the following weekend, last game of the season, are both sellouts. It hangs on Sheffield United's performance at QPR on Friday night. So we will know going into Saturday's game, Michael, what we've got to do. We have to win, number one, and we have to win with some goals, because I think goal difference, if it's going to play a part, we need to make up some of the gap between ourselves and Sheffield United. An unlikely scenario for you, Michael, going into the last two games of the season?
It is unlikely. Of course, it's unlikely. I mean, the goal difference alone is the cliche, an extra point in itself. Looking at the table now, you know, we've got 6 goals. Sheffield United have got 12. Blackburn leapfrogged us yesterday, I believe it was, didn't it? When they beat Preston 4-1. Was it 4-1 they beat Preston?
So
they're on 11 goals. You've got Middlesbrough as well. Let's not forget them. 9th place, 43 games, yeah. 64 points. So they win that. They could go above us as well. But the one thing I'm holding on to, I don't know about you boys, but and normally Millwall ain't involved at this end of the table on the last day, but how many times have you seen on Sky Sports News or BBC or Match of the Day or these sports programmes where they have the live table in the bottom corner and it changes about half a dozen times in the 90 minutes? So it can happen. It can happen. You know, you look last season. I think Derby just stayed up, didn't they, on the very last day, but that bottom three changed a number of times in 90 minutes. So keep the faith. I've kept the faith. My voice notes have been positive. I'm trying to stay on the railway train. The wheels fell off and our damsel in distress might be a little bit still tied onto the train line and can't undo those knots, but she'll get off and we'll keep going. We'll be fine.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Michael. I mean, Harry, we've got a two-game season, effectively, with the odds stacked against us. We could only hope. A lot of it lies out of our hands. And I was playing around with the what do they call them? They're like fixture permutation sites. There's a word for them. I can't think of what they're like. Generator.
Predictor.
We're playing around with the predictor earlier on. I mean, a win for Sheffield United on Friday means that we have to win to keep in with the most remotest chance. I mean, the fact that we're going into these last two games, obviously much depends on us winning on Saturday to have even a remote chance going to Bournemouth. But I mean, there's that's an achievement. I know you've been one of Gary Rowett's critics all season. I don't think there's any secret over that. I think that's fair comment. But to be in with a shout at this late stage is all that we could have aimed for through the season. But I'm interested to see what you think to that proposition, mate.
I mean, yes, in the one hand, it's an achievement. I looking back at the Championship over the last 5 years, the points tally to get you into the playoffs this year will be the lowest it has been in 5 years, possibly. Our maximum amount of points that we can get to is 72. 72 was the amount that we got in the first season back in the Championship under Harrison, fell short, and that was the closest that we've been since. So we could match that points, but we won't beat it. I think a lot's made about what a great job Gary Rowett's doing. I just think it's another season where we haven't... The thing I don't like is that we had an opportunity against Birmingham. Birmingham should never, ever have got anything out of us. And that's unforgivable. You know, the way those cards fell for a three-game season, and you only can take care of yourself. And we didn't take care of that result. You know, Peterborough, yes, we should beat them. We've got to take care of that. And, you know, Bournemouth could need to win to secure second place. Sheffield United have got Fulham. But we've allowed the other teams back in. So now it's not a 50-50 straight fight between us and Sheffield United. By our own shortcomings on Saturday, we have allowed it to be a possibly three, possibly four team fight for the last spot and made it even harder on ourselves. And, you know, yes, on the one hand, it's a great achievement by Millwall with their resources and all of that. And then also on the other hand, it's typical Millwall that they fall short. And, you know, I don't really know where to sit with that. I people will say I'm negative. I don't think I'm necessarily negative. I'm just saying have a dose of realism and look at it from the outside. I'm surprised we're here because we're not a great side. I don't think we are. I don't think anyone's in any kind of illusion that we're a great side. On our day, we're really good and we play some great football. But there have been some real low points this season where you feel, how is this team anywhere near the playoffs? And I think that's the same. Probably Blackburn fans would say that. They've been up there all season. And other clubs will probably say that who are in and around the fight. QPR are up there for a long time and have fallen away due to injuries and so on. And it's just the Championship, really. The Championship
is
unpredictable. Yeah. And you've got to stay there for the 46 games. And for me, we have drawn too many games again. And it's going to come back and bite us on the arse again. And, you know, that's my problem with Gary Rowett again. I think someone raised it on Twitter. I can't remember who did. Said they'd rather have lost. And I know Fizz said it in the show. He'd rather have gone to Birmingham and fucking gone for it and got beat. And at least you would have known that we gave it our all. It just feels like, I know we can give it our all in these two games, but it's like a little bit too late. You know what I mean?
Well, we have to give it our all from here. There's nowhere else to go on Saturday other than giving it an attacking stance, which we'll come back to. But I mean, Michael, I mean, one of my notes to myself, I was just posing myself the question, has it been a good or a bad season? I'm not sure there's a straight answer to that question. I mean, Harry's right in that there've been some pretty turgid sequences. I was looking at the season results. We either go on good runs or go on mediocre runs at best. So it's been a strange season to summarise, and we've surged into this position from a pretty low point. If you look at January, Michael, I mean that was in the aftermath. I think that was when Blackpool beat us in January, and you know most of us were saying the season was over and done with. So to find the form to get us here is great, but then to let it slip seems wasteful. How do you see it, mate?
Well, this is why it's always good having Harry and I on, because we're very yin and yang. I think Harry's being very quite harsh, in truth, because look, I've got the table in front of me now. You said about the draws, totally understand the draw scenario. I can't remember really up until the last couple of games that Rowett had a full strength squad to choose from. I know that obviously you said in a previous show, Harry, that, you know, sometimes that might suit us because it's a little bit back to the wall, you know, us against their mentality, we can only pick what we've got. The Coventry game is a great example. You know, we had all those kids on the bench and we ended up winning. But if you look at the stats, we've lost 12 games. Now, that is two more than Huddersfield in third, one more than Forest in fourth, the same as Luton in fifth, and one less than Sheffield United in sixth. So our actual games we're losing isn't that bad. You know, I say so many people, it sounds like I'm having to go at everyone, I'm not, but there's a lot of people who are a little bit doom and gloom, and you think, we knew at the start of the season, we've said it at the start of the season, we said it last season, we need to be in that top six, you need a 20-25 goal season striker or a combination where they'll get you a lot of goals. Neil Fisler said it on the other show the other day about we shop in the sort of budget supermarkets compared to other shops with Mitrovic and all that. And he's right. And Afobe and Bradshaw have done quite well. But we've been so unlucky with injuries. Bradshaw was in the form of his Millwall career. I won't say the form of his life because he done well at Barnsley. He was in the form of his Millwall career, got injured. Afobe, yes, he has his critics, but he is a class above some of the other players we got. He got injured. We had Tyler Bury. He was doing well. He picked up a knock or hit a bit of down form. Ballard, who was having a fantastic season, got injured. Hutchinson, he got injured. He was out the side for a long time. We had the issue with the right backs at the start of the season, but I think we've done remarkably well. Yes, the football at times has been dire to watch, but when you're in a situation where you see these stats all the time, the spending power of these bigger clubs and the clubs at the top of the table, we are literally two games away from the end of the season within touching distance of the top six with a squad that has been threadbare for the majority of the season, with a manager who gets criticised for being defensive. And I've got to ask an honest question. I mean, Neil Fisler said it the other day as well. And again, this is one of the things that I disagreed with him on, even though I thought he made a lot of good points. Who realistically has been looking at the bottom three this season? Who's actually genuinely...
Well, from our point of view?
Yeah. Who honestly thinks we might go down it? You know, when Nick, you just said, oh, the season was over in January. It wasn't we were near the bottom of the table. It was we were
further down. I'm just trying to find it, Michael. We were in early.
It does help when two teams in your division have been docked points, to be fair. I'll take your point, but
we were 19th, Barry, in September. 19th going and
he's not a relegation manager. I don't think that's ever been questioned. The question is can he take the idea is to take the next step. The idea is to build towards the next step. And I can't see it, Michael. I just can't.
But if you,
see
yeah, but
it.
Harry, if you've not got the spending power to take the next step, how are you going to do it? So that's what I'm saying.
That's the point, isn't it? If you've not got the spending power to take the next step, is he the right manager to build a squad that can take the next step without the spending power? Because
who else is going to get you near the top six this close, two games to go, with no spending power?
But Luton have done it. It's not an impossible job. The point I'm trying to make is that your best players go in. What was the stat at the weekend? That five of the players that played in the squad ain't under contract next season. This is like the League One season when we got promoted. We had to get promoted, otherwise everyone was fucked, right? Like people would have left and we'd have been ended up where Scunthorpe are, where Southend are, where Bristol Rovers ended up getting relegated, right? There are, what's the phrase? There are moments where you've got to seize on to stuff and we haven't done it. You know, all the points that you made about us having injuries, totally understand that. But sometimes we've been worse when we've had a full squad. The squad is his squad to build. Yes, we've had injuries. Totally understand that. But he decided to let people go and keep people and decide to do what he wants with it. That's his job. You know, there's other teams who have had worse injury crises than us this season. I think of Blackburn haven't had arguably the best striker in the division for this side of 3 months, to a point where they decided to cancel a game against us 10 minutes before it kicked off. And Bradley Dack as well. You know, QPR haven't had a fit goalkeeper for 3 months. And they've all fallen away as well. So, yeah, your point's totally valid. But the problem is that I don't like the reliance on loan players. Yeah, we've got to where we are, but I don't like the reliance on loan players. I don't like the fact that Tyler Bury hasn't played because Tyler Bury This is another question. If Tyler Bury is being courted by all these clubs, why hasn't he been in our side every week? Why are we trusting him? Why are we playing Ollie Burke in front of him? Why are we doing these things?
You're judged on the bottom line in football, Harry. I mean, we all know that. And you know, at the moment we were placed seventh until the game last night. We're now eighth in the table. Gary Rout would point to that. I'm just looking at his previous record of he came in the course of 2019-20. We finished eighth there, and that was a COVID curtailed season. Behind closed doors, 11th, and we're eighth at the moment. So I suppose he would point at that and say, tell me who's done better at your club. He would say that. And I posed that question to myself. I thought I'll have a look and see who has done better at our club. And there's only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 managers at Millwall that have done better than that. And that's Mark McGee in 2001-02 when we came fourth and obviously famously lost out in the playoffs. Mick McCarthy twice in 93-94, 92-93. We finished third and seventh under McCarthy. Bruce Rioch, 1990-91, we finished fifth. I'm going to exclude the Division One season because they don't count to what we're talking about. But we finished first, obviously, under the great Johnny Dock in 1987-88. And then you're going to go back to 1971-72 when I started going, 50 years ago, a lifetime ago, to find Benny Fenton. So I think what the point of that is that budget does play a part. We are, whether we like it or not, and there might be a million and one reasons as to why this should or should not be, but we are a small-time club fighting in a division where others can bring a lot more to the table. Look at Fulham's 100 goals. I know that's artificially inflated with Premier League parachute money and the Bournemouth also, you know, vying for second place. They may or may not achieve that, but another team that's inflated with an artificial source of money, if you like. So for us to be in the game, for us to even be competing, and I take your point, Harry. I do get where I think you're going, which is that you should aspire to be better. And there's no, what happened in 1971 has no relevance, arguably, to what happens in 2022. But you've got to aim upwards. Otherwise, it's pointless. But
I'm just looking at what
it remains an achievement, Harry. This remains an achievement for Gary Rowett.
Well, yeah, it is an achievement for Gary Rowett to probably finish eighth on 72 points. No, that's the maximum we can achieve. The maximum we can achieve is 72 points. And going back,
yeah, well, now because we've let situations go, and I think that was what I wanted to come back to, because we have let points go.
Just quickly as well, just before you start, Harry, looking at it again. You saying about how poor it's been. And yes, like even asked, some of the actual football quality hasn't been great. Looking at it now, there are only 3 teams across the entire division from 1st to 24th who have conceded less goals than Millwall all season.
Do you get promoted on that?
I'm not saying you do, Harry. I'm not saying you do. But what I'm saying is that you're within touching distance of the pass for 2 games to go. Only the top 2 and the team in 4th have conceded less goals than you, and you're actually averaging to concede 1 goal a game where teams above you are conceding more than that. So this is where I'm not causing an argument with you or trying to, sorry if I sound aggressive, but I just think there's so many positives you can take from the situation. And like you say, with the reliance on the loan players, there was obviously talk in the transfer windows that there was players that Gary wanted to sign, but he couldn't. So, again, financial situation. Do you blame Gary Rowett for that? You say about all these players being out of contract. He could go to someone and go, I want to give someone a 4-year deal. They go, can't afford it. So let's put it this way.
Was it a good idea to sign Alex Pearce last summer for another year on $8,000 a week? Was that a good idea? Because how many games he played? 2? 3?
I would disagree with that signing, and there's been others. I mean, we'll come back to those that are leaving us, because I've done a list of, you'll be thankful to know, listeners, I've done a list of who I think is going to be leaving us in the summertime. But if you want this season's been very hard to summarize because it comprises of good and bad phases. But if you want a bad phase, listeners, where this season got away from us, I'm going to refer you to the December the December to January period, where I'm just looking at those results here, chaps. And we beat Birmingham 3-1 in early December, so disregard that. We then get beat 2-1 at Peterborough in a dire afternoon, which was where the crowd turned on Gary Rowett. Your football is shit. I think, Harry, you remember that. So awful, awful.
Yeah, I wish I could.
It was an awful afternoon, and it was.
Well, Jed got injured as well at that point, or did he, or didn't he? Is up to whether or not
it was just such a patsy performance, Harry, and that was there's that. So you got that performance there. We nick a win at Coventry.
The point there now with the benefit of hindsight.
we nick a win at Coventry 1-0, but then we go and give away a half-time lead, which is diabolical in any form of football. We're winning 2-1 at Bristol on January the 2nd. Give that away to go 3-2 down. Let's disregard the Crystal Palace game, the FA Cup, but even though we were winning that and then we gave that away, but albeit against the Premier League side, and a decent one in fairness, so much as that sticks in my throat. We've then got losing 1-0 at Forest. We get beat at Blackpool, which is on a par with the Peterborough performance. Another dire moment in the season before we start to try and recover our position with a win over West Brom. But that period, chaps, of kind of late December and the bulk of January is where this season's got away from us. We've had winning positions given away. What I don't understand is how that same team with such dire afternoons as Blackpool and Peterborough, but also Ashton Gate and other games where we've not looked 100%, can then go into an unbeaten run, which is what we do through February and March, producing for me one of the best games I've seen in a long time in that 2-0 win over Huddersfield, which is March the 16th, which seems a bit of a long while ago now I'm saying it, but a performance of the... I don't know. It was what I would argue the best performance, maybe the Forest away win, Harry. But I don't understand is how we can have such inconsistency, such lurching from the sublime to the ridiculous, some of the excellence to appalling. You know, it's been an odd season in that way.
I think sometimes the squad isn't settled because I don't think Gary Rowett is settled in his mind of what his best squad was. That comes back to the injuries. That Michael's already touched upon, because I think it's all right saying players are fit to play, but form matters at this level. And if you come back and you're 0.1% off it, you're gonna get found out. So I'll give him a little bit of leeway there. I don't want it to come across that I want Gary Rowett to be sacked. I don't. I just don't like the people that seemingly you can criticise him and actually question him without wanting him to be sacked. I agree with that. His football, right? But if he gets me all to the Premier League, I'll be over the moon, right? And I'll take back most of what I've said about him, and it's effective because the league table doesn't lie. What I don't like is I don't like some of the media speak. I don't like it. I think he insults my intelligence. He tries to jazz it up on Sky, and you know, if we're shit, tell me that we're shit, and that's all I want to know. I don't need you to lie to me. My eyes have just watched you for 90 minutes, right? You know, and I think a lot of Millwall fans will respect that. But that's why he doesn't push, as I've said before, he doesn't push my footballing buttons. The problem that I've got again going forward is if we don't get to the playoffs this season. You know, it's still been a good season. To be in it this close is an achievement, as you said. But again, we've fallen again. And, you know, you can't keep falling. His record as a Millwall manager has been to be, what, 11th? What was it? 11th?
11th. Well, he started out
11th,
at
8th. 8th. Yeah.
8th, 11th, and now wherever we finish this season, 8th, 7th, 9th, whatever it finishes up at. It might still be 6. I mean, we're talking as though the season is done. It's a mathematical miracle, some might argue, listeners, but it's not done for yet. But let's go for 7th or 8th or 9th, because I think that's probably the most likely outcome. I think it's the eternal problem of the Millwall manager, Harry. I mean, whatever anyone's personal taste on Gary Rowett's football might be, I think in the end, it's going to come down to an inability to sign real top quality finishing. So, you know, that's been our problem, maybe apart from when Morrison and Gregor are in their pomp in League One. I'm trying to think of the last top striker that we've had, and we're probably going to go back to Neil Harris in his heyday. Because apart from that, I can't think of many really lethal strikers. The ones that leap out.
I still think that they've scored enough goals, the front two, realistically. I think our problem comes from elsewhere. They've both got double figures. Admittedly, that could be more. But, you know, it's a Phoebe and Bradshaw. And then I'm going to guess, is it Cooper that's the next item?
They've emerged.
Jed and Murray Wallace. So you've got a Phoebe on
the Wallaces.
Bradshaw on 9 and Jed and Murray Wallace both on 6. But I mean, look at the assists. Jed's got 11 assists this season.
We're gonna miss Jed.
Bye. 17 involved in 17 goals. Bye. So how many? What percentage of that is that? What percentage of that goals was that? 17. You know, and people call me critical. I'm just a fucking realist. That's a lot to fucking find. That is a lot to find. Probably percentage wise, what's that? Probably 30% of our goals. Like
well, let's look at who's we're gonna say goodbye. We think almost certainly, unless we get into the Premier League, and that's looking a remote possibility, listeners. We're gonna be saying goodbye to Jed Wallace after 6 years, 250 plus appearances, 43 goals. I haven't got the assist table with me, but he's a major influence and a substantial player in Millwall terms. We really notice it when he's not in the team, and I think that was apparent on some of the recent performances where, you know, he's been out injured. No Jed, no party. It does seem as though he wants to put himself at the higher level. He wants wherever that might take him. I did read Beşiktaş in Turkey. So, I mean, we've got to say good luck to him wherever he takes his trade. But, I mean, Harry's right there, Michael. I mean, that's going to be a big loss to the club, the departure of Jed. I don't see where we're going to replace that creativity at the moment anyway.
No, I agree. And the thing is, as well, is that Harry was saying about QPR missing their goalkeeper and other players missing for their teams. I don't think. I know that some players have to a degree raised their game when Jed's been out, but was out injured and sort of like we did nick a few results here and there. But they seemed like we had to really dig deep and really grind out that result just to get like the sort of, you know, the 2-1s and the 1-0s, etc. You know, without Jed, I don't think there's probably a player in the Championship who is as influential for their club as Jed Wallace is for us. And yeah, do you know what? Fair play to him. If he does want to go on, it's very similar to the league, Gregory. He's not asked for the move. He probably would have liked to, the ideal world, he probably would have liked to have stayed with us in the Premier League if we got promoted. And I'm sure, if you know, if you had that sort of crystal ball and said to Jed Wallace, you know, maybe next season we'd get in the Premier League for sure, you know, would you stay? You would stay. But he stayed till the end of his contract. He's not asked for a move. He's played, looking at this thing as well, he's played 37 games this year. Harry said there's 17 goal contributions for either goals or assists. He's done incredible. So if this is his last season, fair play to him. Fair play to him. We'll miss you, Jed.
We will. A lot of question marks, Harry, over how we're going to replace that. I mean, you make a great point, actually, the assist for this season. I mean, it's apparent that there's going to be a big hole left where Jed Wallace was in the squad. I'm just going to run through, if we may, some of the other goodbyes. You may be less distraught to see some of these names go, Harry. Oliver Burke, presumably. You think he's going to stay? You think he's one that Rowett is keen on? You think so?
Yeah, I reckon so.
His loan period is up, so I've taken that to be goodbye, Oliver Burke. But we'll see. It's already been announced that Conor Mahoney is going to go for better or for worse. He's never really scratched the surface of Gary Rowett's affections, is he, Conor Mahoney? And the club have said that he's going to go. Shay Ojo, we don't really know he's a boy looking for a club, really, or a place to settle, isn't he? He's never really settled anywhere. And I don't get a sense that Millwall he's really settled. Do you think he's another one that Gary Rowett might be keen on?
I hope not. but then again, I don't get the fucking transfer policy. You know, I don't understand. I don't want him to sign Burke, but I can see him doing it. But yeah, I just think that you know, Ryan's right. He said it before. I've echoed it. Recruitment. We don't do well. We don't want players on the way down. We want players on the way up.
No,
that's what we do well. That's what
Aaron's asked this question about: what kind of club do you want to be? It's the same question that you're asking there, and Ryan's made it previously. You're right, and you know, it's a big question to answer because we are going to have a creative problem in that there's no Jed.
The creative problem in terms of that is great. Like, oh yeah, we've lost Jed. You've got the fucking boy Wonder sitting there, who I think is the most naturally gifted dribbler I've seen at the club since Paul Ifill, right? And it's ridiculous.
You mean Tyler Bury?
Tyler Bury should be fucking the one that you're building this next stage of recruitment around. The only thing
you've got with that though, Harry, is potential is just that potential. I mean, in the nicest possible way, and hindsight, as we always say, is a wonderful thing. Everyone was saying this about Fred Onyedinna, and he just couldn't do it for us. He's doing it for Luton.
He's in with a stronger shout of the Premier League than we are.
Of course. But what I'm saying is he didn't do it for us. Lewis Graven. We signed Lewis Graven. Everyone was saying, he's no good. He's food bob and all this. And now he's smashed him in. So it's potential, isn't it?
Oh, I agree. But the difference between Fred and Lewis Graven and Tyler Bury is that Tyler Bury came back. And I think we've looked our best when we have Jeb Wallace on the right or Tyler Bury or Mason Bennett when fit off the left with a Phoebe through the middle or Bradshaw.
We've missed Mason
as a free, right?
Season.
So that is the system that works best for us. So if that's what we want to. We're going to have Mason Bennett next season. And you're one of the people that wants Benik Afobe. So if we do keep Benik Afobe, which I think is unlikely just because of Millwall paying anything more than a bag of beans for a player still shocks me.
But Bennick's 12 goals. We talked about Jed's creativity, Harry, and his assists tally. Bennick, whatever you think of him as a striker, I mean, is he on 12 goals at the moment? I haven't got the...
Top goal scorer. He's got 12 in 39, which ain't a bad return.
What's Bradshaw's return? 9 in how many?
Nine
and much faster. A good ratio. Yeah. So Benik Afobe is another one. We've mentioned him. Dan Ballard's coming towards the end of his loan period. It remains to be seen whether we can make a bid for him. Whether we're in the game for him, I don't know.
I don't think we're anywhere near in the league that can keep Dan Ballard. I'll be totally honest. I mean, if we got promoted, yes, I think we'd have funds there that you'd sign him understanding the fact that...
He's a good player, Harry.
He's a great player. But the thing is, like, everyone's, you know, it went around Twitter, didn't it? You had Thomas Frank and David Moyes there. And I'm going to tell you right now, every single West Ham fan that I have the displeasure of talking to talks about the fact they need a centre-half. So, I mean, Dan Ballard is fucking class. And a ball-playing, squash-buckling, you know, centre-back of... You know, he's got everything. So I think he's a Premier League player in waiting.
His quality and crucially has shown it in recent games where the defence actually, I mean, Saturday, I thought our defence looked very fragile, which is another thing that's developed on us in this strange season. I mean, I think we're going to miss Dan when he's gone, Michael, don't you? I think he's been, he's a player that's come on leaps and bounds in the hot house of the Den. He seems to really have responded to it, which any watching Premier League manager would take note of and would want. I mean, Harry's mentioned West Ham. Wouldn't surprise me to see him move along to West Ham.
Yeah. Or he might, if he is loaned out again, which he probably will do at Arsenal, because he's a very, very good player, but I don't think he's obviously near their first team yet. It wouldn't surprise me if he went to one of the possibly relegated clubs who are looking at going straight back up to like a Norwich or a team like that who always...
There's
no doubt he is. But what I'm saying is that as a confidence builder, would you, as Arsenal, would you want to send him to somewhere like Norwich when they go down because you know they'll be winning every week top of the table? Or would you want to send him somewhere, if they stay up, somewhere like a Burnley where it's just going to be an absolute slog every single week, you know, like the atmosphere is not going to be too great and that kind of thing. So it would
I think I think someone offers Arsenal £15 to £25 million for him and he fucks off in the summer. That's what I think happens.
I think
that's what's going to happen. I generally believe that Arsenal were probably going out of the doing this rebuilding job themselves. I think he's, if this was 2 years ago, I think he'd have got back in, he'd almost be Arsenal first team or definitely around the squad, but they're moving towards sort of Champions
but
League.
Do both of you really think at the moment, because I rate Ballard really highly, but do both of you really think he's Premier League already?
I think he is.
I'm very impressed with him. I mean, I'm no position to judge if he's Premier League. I'd get every, if he's not, then
do you think the bottom six of the Premier League are anybody, are then the top six of the Championship other than spending power? Do you think some of the worst football by Everton this season or some of the worst football by Burnley and Norwich? The only reason when they come back down is they bounce back is because just the spending power. But when they play in the Premier League, they're showing up, that they get confidence in our division. Look at what happens with Mitchell.
That's exactly my point. Because I think if this Fulham team was in the Premier League this season, I think they'd probably stayed up, because that bottom three of the Premier League has been utter dross this season. It's been awful. But like you say,
I think a lot of people think that of the Championship, though. If you look at the points tally, other than Fulham, realistically, and arguably Bournemouth, and I mean Forest have still got a chance of second. They've got two games still, like on. You know,
yeah, I mean we've got to keep making the point. We'll keep making the point, boys, that the season is not over yet. We're doing a kind of a season summary here, but from a Millwall perspective, the odds are in favour of it probably being all but over. But they're still not done from our point of view either. But
in
you're
what
right,
minute do you reckon Mr. Bye for now asks us not to run on the pitch on Saturday?
Do like a bingo. Yeah. I've got some easy goodbyes for you, Harry. I'm going to serve these are easy ones for you to nod home. Luke Freeman, he's coming towards the end of his short tenure with the Lions.
You know after that game, the game later on in the season at the Den, I think Michael might have more minutes than Luke Freeman.
Those who saw his 12 minutes, Michael, will count ourselves lucky men one day that we saw the 12 minutes of Luke Freeman in the blue shirt.
He's going to go into Millwall folklore like Juan.
Michael Kieftenbeld, I think he's coming towards the end of his contract. I don't know him. Gary Rowett seems to have a soft spot for him when he came back on Saturday, which I didn't understand. We've mentioned erratic decision-making, Harry, already, to replace Billy with Michael Kieftenbeld.
Don't need seven midfielders at the club, do we? Or seven defensively minded ones? Yeah, I think I don't think he's a bad player. I just think he's probably a squad player in a team with more resources than our own. But we just need, if you're going to play
something more exciting, I do agree.
Ryan Leonard for me, it's like a Ryan Leonard or Kieftenbeld kind of conundrum. And Ryan Leonard can play right back, so Ryan Leonard stays, and you get rid of Kieftenbeld when you can, kind of thing for me. But I know, obviously, Gary Rowett likes him, so he'll probably stay. Like
Michael,
this season.
Michael, you're going to be distraught to see the end of Alex Pearce. His contract is up at the end of May as well.
Do you know what? Honestly, he's the only bloke who turns slower than me when he plays football. So when I watch him play, he makes me feel good about himself. No, but do you know what? We say what we do about Pearce, and I mean, God loves a try, doesn't he? But he does try. He's just not good enough. You know, you can't knock against him.
He's probably a brilliant pro and all that kind of stuff. But
that's what I was going to say. He's clearly a good influence on the squad. Let's not forget as well, when Gary Rowett got COVID and him and Williams took the side over,
they took control of the team, didn't
they? Yeah, you know. And when he came in under Harris, you know, we all mock. But, you know, he came in as a lone player. And then the next season, in his first full season, he got made club captain, didn't he? So,
we won one under him, we lost one. So, I mean, it's 50% hit rate. That's not bad.
That's not a bad return.
Dave Tuttle would have killed that ratio.
I'm going to throw two more names at you, chaps, because these are open questions. Then we've got two boys on loan. I think we've got more of these, but these are the ones that leapt out at me. One is Isaac Alofe at the Sutton. I have a sense, Harry, that if we were going to bring him back, we'd have brought him back already. But I don't know the thinking of the great football managers of our time. So would you bring him back? Would you want to see him? Would you?
I hope you're not referring to Gary Rowett as one of the great football managers of our time before serving me that question. What does our football manager think of
it? Isaac Alofe is the question, mate. I mean, he's unknown at Sutton, done well at Sutton, but we've shown no signs to bring him back, which I, you know.
Yeah, I think it's a big step from League Two to bring him to the top end of the Championship. I think Isaac Alofe will end up playing for Millwall, just maybe we need to loan him out again, maybe to a League One club. And see
he'd be retiring.
Is.
We keep loaning him out. If he older than me.
How old? Well, This is the point, though. This is the point.
He's 104 at the moment.
Well, he'll be getting the work on his card on his free Oyster card.
How old is he? 24.
22.
Right. So yeah. 22. So he's still younger. He could do with one more for me. One more year in a mid-table League One side and see if he gets in that side. You don't. We murder young players at the Den, by the way. We do murder them. We do kill them. So maybe being away for a little bit and learning his trade elsewhere might not be the worst thing. We also don't have a manager that tends to trust in youth either, from all the evidence that we've been given over the last like three, four seasons. Is it 3.5 years now? 4 years? You know, the average age of the squad's gone up. You know, arcing back to old points. So I don't think. Looking at young players is something that Gary Rowett or developing young players is something that Gary Rowett particularly cares about. That's not a knock. Some managers do, some managers don't. And, you know, I'd like to
have a sight of Alofe, Michael, wouldn't you? I mean, you know, he's a player that I would like to have seen, even if only to say, no, he weren't good enough. You know, we just don't know enough about his match by match form, really. He seems to have done well at Sutton. But,
yeah.
Who knows? We'll see. And in the same category, Michael, Alex Mitchell at Orient, whether he's seen as a contender to come back to the Den with Ballard going.
I can have a strong opinion with Alex Mitchell from an Orient.
Well, Michael first, and we'll come back to you, Harry. Yeah.
Well, no, I was just going to say, he seems to do all right. It was at Yeovil that he was loaned at first, wasn't it? Was it Yeovil?
Yeovil, and then he went to Lake Orient, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. But it's all gone very. I mean, I'm not sure whether it's because he's not going particularly well at Orient. It's gone quiet, but we've not heard too much about him, have we? And there's an Orient fan I know at work here who's not disrespectful about him, but he's not pulling up any trees really. I mean, I've not seen Orient play, and I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I'm some oracle of League Two football. But normally, when your players do well on loan, you hear about them, you know, like Isaac, we've heard a lot about him when we've loaned out other players in the past, like McNamara when he was at St Johnstone. Everyone was raving about how well he was doing, but he seems to have gone quiet with Mitchell, doesn't he?
He was injured for 2 months. It's just basically why it went quiet.
That might be why it was there.
in that run where Jackett got sacked, Mitchell got injured, which basically, not saying that he was there, basically the Orient fan that I know, basically said that Mitchell was their best defender. I don't know how good that is in a second half, bottom half.
League Two side, yeah.
Yeah, but basically when they lost him, that it all went to shit and he's come back and they've gone on a winning run. So whether the two are linked or the change of, you know, getting Kenny Jackett and he done very well for us, but ever since then it's been, I think he's one of these managers that's gone, managers have a sell-by date, don't they? And, you know, he done a great job for us, but didn't particularly look overly loved at Portsmouth nor Leighton Orient, and I just think it's the end of the road for Kenny. I don't think it'll work again.
He will in the club shop.
In the club shop. I mean, like, not being funny, I think that the club shop could do with a bit of an helping hand. We've talked about it before. Maybe that's the idea.
He's a very, very helpful man, isn't he? Yeah, maybe he could take over the club shop.
He'll do the stop tank.
I'm going to take a short break there, listeners. We're going to come back very, very shortly with my home-produced Good, the Bad and the Ugly theme, because I daren't use the copyrighted version, otherwise I'll get this podcast taken off. I'll be right back after these messages.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Achtung, Mehlball.
Welcome back, listeners, after that comfort break there. Boys, I'm going to play a sound effect. It may well be me doing the good, the bad, and the ugly things. I want to look at the good, the bad, and the ugly of the season. So first up is the good, Harry. We're going to look at the good in this season. I'm going to focus on the good things that have happened. And I've written down a little list. See if you agree with these or if you disagree, chaps, as I read through them. Wherever we finish this season is a good finish. 8th, 9th, 7th, possibly 6th even. The league table finish is one of the better points. So however we've got here, by whatever convoluted route, we've touched on it already, so I don't want to go over it too much. But I think by Millwall standards, historically and in terms of the current championship, we've done pretty well to finish just outside the playoff zone. Do you agree, or is that going too far for
100%.
You, Harry?
Yes, but it's a missed opportunity.
As we've said. All right. I've written down some, underlined the word some, of the football we've played, e.g. Millwall 2, Huddersfield Town 0. But also on odd occasion, when we played well, and I think maybe that's one of the most frustrating parts of this season. We seem to be on the brink of playing really well at times, but we don't sustain it. And we seem to have cold starts to games, cold first halves a lot recently. I mean, we saw a little bit of that at Birmingham on Saturday. But when we do click and when we do connect, we don't look a bad side. I think it's one of the most frustrating parts of what has been, whichever way you want to look at it, is a decent finished season. But we do seem to have that potential, Harry, at times.
At times, yeah. At times. Not enough to possibly to get promoted, but it's not a relegation season.
All right. Michael, our backs to the wall, unbeaten runs. We played really well. We've produced a really good string of results with our backs to the wall when we were playing Zach Lovelace on the bench and Tyrese Briscoe and the kids and all the rest of it. We seem to be able to... We found some steel when it was needed, and that's largely what's driven us towards this finish point, wherever we do finish in the table. I think that's to the squad's credit, that ability to dig deep and find something when we were looking pretty much a very average mid-table to lower table side earlier on, not that long ago either.
Yeah, I agree. And you say credit, but it's also to their character. You know, everyone wrote them off. Like, we used the example of the Coventry game. Everyone wrote them off against them, or wrote them off, was probably grammatically more correct. But we won that game. I mean, everyone wrote us off against Palace. Yes, we lost the game, but I think we actually did better than a lot of people thought.
We were in the mix against Palace, weren't we? Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Yeah, positive.
This is a relentless diet of super sweet positivity, listeners. But I'm going to mention also the Wallaces, Jed and Murray Wallace. We think Murray may well be a strong contender for player of the season, rightly so, because if ever there's a more inspiring Mill story, it's that transformation from being a fairly journeyman defender from Scunthorpe when he started, Harry, into a player that is... He's forced himself to become a must-pick. I mean, I can't imagine, even Gary Rowe, I can't imagine him dropping him at the moment. And that's quite an achievement for Murray Wallace as a player, you know, to force yourself into that kind of contention when you didn't start from that position at all. You know, no one was really excited when he joined us, were they?
No. I mean, he'd just been murdered by Steve Morrison in a second leg of a playoff final. Or a semi-final, rather. But, yeah, I mean, Murray Wallace has been phenomenal this season for me. You know, he's a shining light of the season. I think he's been the most consistent of those players that we've mentioned who's ours, other than Ballard. Ballard obviously got injured. So I think Murray Wallace has been the ever-present, the most consistent, the most surprising. Now, it's not surprising that he's good, but it kind of was. And for me, he's got half a sniff of being, if not the captain... possibly the vice captain next season.
Because of that leadership,
just because I think he's a cool head. I mean, anyone that Cruyff turns as a defender, any defender that Cruyff turns has got to have some kind of ice in their veins, haven't they? Because that's everyone's worst nightmare of getting, you know, giving that away. Yes, sometimes he still does weird things with a ball. You know, there's a ball that should just go and it goes straight back up in the air and you think, oh, fucking hell, Murray. And then it will win the header, you know. But
he's literally
the walking embodiment of the club in terms of don't have to be the best player, but if you run for a brick wall for us, we'll love you forever. And I think it's not as simple as that, because I think he is becoming a better player while he's been here, but he is literally... you know, one of my favourite players of recent times, if I'm being honest.
I agree. Next on my list, Michael, the emergence... I don't know, can we say the emergence of Danny Mac? I don't know. I think this season has seen...
Yeah, I think so.
Danny Mac has really emerged as a very, very good player. I wondered, actually, whether Moyes and Thomas Frank were looking as much at Danny Mac as they were at possibly Dan Ballard or, you know, I don't know who else. But really, really strong... player and Mill through and through, Michael. I mean, if there's one thing that we love, is that maybe sometimes it leads him into the odd rash challenge and, you know, rush of blood to the head. But that's the club, isn't it? That's the Mill supporting body.
Yeah, and the thing is as well with him, was it Bournemouth away last season? It was either his first game or one of his very first games he played for us. And you know, there was question marks of whether he should have been in the squad then, but. Since then, really, he's not looked back. And, you know, yes, people have their opinions on Marlon Romeo, but to force a player of that pedigree out of the side, because I did rate Romeo personally. And he plays like he's been there for years, doesn't he? Like he's got such an experienced head on his shoulders. And as silly as it sounds as well, he's a defender who can defend. There's too many defenders now who bomb forward, and Malone's a great example, a player who you have as a sort of wing-back or a defensive player, benchmarks, and they just keep running forward and forget they need to defend. But McNamara has a discipline. He seems to know what he needs to do. He does it well. He's got a couple of goals this season, and I think he's been brilliant. And I know, what's his face, Ryan says it, he doesn't want to see McNamara at Millwall in a couple of years. He wants to see us sell McNamara for about £15 million because he's got that much potential and he could be that good. And we could, you know...
Even more.
But that's exactly my point. You've got a player there who you nurture him, right? And he keeps playing the way he's going. He's either going to be a foundation of your club if we do build... like you say, Harry, and get up the table and get promotion, or he's one of the players who get decent money for and reinvest that money back in. So I think he's been brilliant, McNamara.
I think Danny will want to pitch himself at the highest levels if he possibly can. And like Jed, you can't blame a player for wanting that, Harry, can you?
No, you can't. I think with Danny Mac, it's a little bit different. I think the fact that he went and played in Scotland in the Premier League has helped him massively.
He did.
I think that quality, that little bit of having to, you know, we all take the piss out of Scottish football, And yeah, but you know that there's four games a season where you're likely to get not have the ball for, you know, 90 minutes against Rangers and Celtic. Wasn't it like a fashionable club? Was he at St. Johnson, if I remember rightly?
St. Johnson, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, he's learned a lot. I think he learned a lot. I think the Championship and probably the top end of the Championship is probably the same as the top end in Scotland. Maybe it's got a little bit better now. Celtic and Rangers seemingly have recovered, but for a while it was the same. I think he's kicked on this season. The more games he plays, the more assured he looks, the more confident he looks. Echoing what Michael said and what Ryan said before, it will be, I will say for him, and I know this is thing, I mean, Millwall and Irish players, seemingly it works well, but I have absolutely no fucking idea how he is not in the Ireland squad or hasn't had a call up yet. Seamus Coleman is older than I am, and he's still playing for the Republic of Ireland at right back. And I can't, you know, that's a shambles in itself.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe he's not playing for a fashionable club. I mean, it's been the curse of many a Millwall player.
I think that's got a lot to do with it. I think if and when, I mean, I think you're touching on if Moyes or Thomas Frank were looking at him, I think the only saving grace we've got is that Nottingham Forest have got that Spence on loan from Middlesbrough, which is strange, who I think everyone's after. And I think there's a few others that sort of grab the headlines a bit more than Danny Mac, which is no problem for us. I'd be quite happy to have Danny Mac again next season. If he guides us to a better finish next season and we finish seventh this season, we'll probably be in the playoffs. So there we go.
But Ryan's point is a good one. It's a painful road, but that's how Brentford have progressed. It is selling your assets at the top of the market and using that to, you know, to build the squad. I think that's what we hope will be the kind of club that we can become. Anyway, I'm continuing my list of good points, the good, the bad and the ugly. Listeners, Bart Bielkowski is next. I mean, I'm hoping there's a painting somewhere in the depths of the Millwall offices where Bart ages in the painting but stays forever youthful in real life. A bit like a Dorian, the picture of Dorian Gray. A Polish version. World-class saves to order, really. You can talk about his distribution, Harry, at times, but I'll trade that for that ability to make saves that you just don't quite believe you've seen sometimes. It's been a long while since we've had that good a goalkeeper at the Den. And Bart Bielkowski will be, as I say, I'm hoping that we can keep him in cryogenic storage for many, many years to come. Michael, we've mentioned Benicophobia already, but Benicophobia's 12 goals is actually a good point for the season. Matt Smith scored 13 in 2019-20. After that, you are going back to the classic era of Lee Gregory and Steve Morrison to find strikers in double figures at the Den. So that's not a bad achievement. You can talk about the man in front where I stand often tells him how lazy he is and how he doesn't do this and he doesn't do that. But 12 goals is, in that context, not a bad achievement for Bennett, as is Tom Bradshaw. We've mentioned him already. 8 goals from 17 starts. That's not bad either, is it?
No, and these are two players who, let's not forget, Bradshaw, I think it was last season, was very hot and cold. Some people were saying he was... Do you know what? Even on this podcast, people were saying that, you know, is he finished? Is it time for him to move on? He's not scored for ages. He can't find the back of the net. When we signed Afobe, he wasn't exactly scoring on all, firing on all cylinders, was he? He'd had spells abroad and things didn't work for him. And we know there's obviously the sad things in his personal life, but he wasn't scoring and he seems to be going around a bit. So you've got two strikers there who on paper shouldn't be anywhere near double figures at this level, or your forward line, or your forward line in a top 8 team. So yeah, 100%. And the thing is, it's like we say with Afobe, he might not get you 20 goals, and he might have games where he looks lazy, but he does things with the ball sometimes that I don't think, apart from maybe Jed Wallace, many of our players could do. You know, I mean, it did. With McNamara's goal the other week, wasn't it? I think it was against Barnsley. You know, if you just watch Afobe in the build-up for the goal, like he shields the ball, manages to turn under pressure on the line where they're about to take a throw, turns, it's across. Highline. McNamara comes in and scores. He's a top player. He's a top player, Afobe. I think he's been a real success personally. But again, I can't talk to your mate who don't sit too far away from you.
I mean, for me, it's just wages. That's just my problem with him.
Wages may be a problem, Harry. Yeah.
I just wouldn't want Millwall to pay that kind of wages for that kind of player. That's just all it is, you know. And I think I don't think that might not be a problem. I think if he thinks he's getting the same money that he's on at Stoke, if he's moving to the Den, I think he's in for a rude awakening with that one.
A reality check. We'll see. We'll see. I just want to mention Tom Bradshaw. We've mentioned him a couple of times, but I just the stat that really lets out is 8 goals from 17 starts. That's not a bad rate of return.
Let's also
any level, Harry.
No, and he's had 2 bad injuries while he's been here. No, we signed him and he got injured.
Yeah, exactly.
And he looked done. He come back. He's found a way to play. I have always liked his work rate. He's not necessarily always got the goals, but this season, he's a proper box striker. Like if it's in the area or if he's between the posts, I fancy him to score.
Serve him up correctly. He's a scorer, isn't he? Yeah,
he's a finisher. I take your point on a phobia. That they are a bit yin and yang themselves in the fact that Bradshaw isn't the most skillful player, isn't the most physical, but you know where the back of the net is. And you know, a bit like there's players at this level that do that all the time, like Vyman used to do it, and there's been others before that just seemingly score goals at this level for fun. And I think Bradshaw could do that. I think he could keep scoring. I don't think it's a flash in the pan. I think he looks so comfortable and happy. He looks happy. Like, you know, when you can look at football.
He seems settled at the club, Harry.
Yeah. He signed that deal, and I think his family, like, he's got a young daughter, and I think they come to the games. I think he's just happy and likes living in London. It's probably, like, I don't think he's obviously, I think he's an orphaner.
He's from out of town somewhere, yeah.
I think he's settled there and enjoys his life and he's enjoying his football, you know. It's easy to say when you're winning games and he's probably scoring goals, but I generally do think he's having a bit of a renaissance. And, you know, let's not be funny. If a phobia was our player and Bradshaw was our player and they scored more than 20 goals, they wouldn't be our players anymore. That is the reality.
But Tom Bradshaw is a big asset for our club. So that's the at the end of my little list. The good, it's the name of the piece, listeners, is the good, the bad and the ugly. And the bad and the ugly do rather tend to merge in together. So I'm not going to dwell too long on these. And we've covered a lot of them in some depth. But the bad and the ugly, some dire performances this season. E.g. Peterborough and Blackpool, we've mentioned that already. Harry, you've mentioned already the seemingly endless draws. I love that internet meme of Gary Rowett with the shark from Jaws and draws written on it. I thought that still amuses me. Some jokes just amuse you every time you see them. That still does. Mm-hmm. Decision making of Gary Rowett, we've touched on. I don't want to flog this one, Harry, but you know, selling of Matt. Selling of Matt Smith. I mean, I know Smith, he might have wanted to get away up north because he's got his uni and family, and I think he's trying to get business going up there. But he was our 13 goal striker in 2019-20. He was still a dangerous man to bring off the substitute bench when we were chasing a game. I struggled with a little bit. The likes of bringing in Keith and Beld on Saturday, we've mentioned that already. And then the ugly, I still can't quite get my head around Bristol City where we gave up a 2-1 half-time lead. We shouldn't have done that.
Fulham at home, I think, was ugly.
Yeah, that was a poor result, wasn't it? That was a 2-1 loss, was it?
It was worse than that. I think it was
3-1?
I don't think we scored. I definitely don't think I'm going to find it. It could have been even worse.
I'll edit this, listeners, to make it sound like I've got it to hand. Hang on. 2-1.
It felt like 4-0.
It might be the away.
No. I remember the home game where we changed formation for one of the few times this season where we went to a back four and we were fucking awful. And that was early on. And I just feel like, you know, what you're going there in the bad and the ugly is the things that Gary Rowett, when he first come in, used to make changes and they'd make, like, mid-game and they'd make us better and we'd win. I think that's slowly ebbing away over time, which is a concern.
Yeah. A summertime of change looming. I think that's the best way we can probably look to finish the show. Saturday looms. Peterborough at home. Relegated Peterborough. We need a win and we need goals. Full house at the Den. The stage is set. Doesn't always work out for the best, does it, when we have the big occasion set in this way? But you're looking forward to it, mate?
Yes and no. I'm looking forward to it in the sense that it's nice to have a full Den. It's nice to, you know, like all sort of Den moments, they can either be brilliant or they can be fucking awful. And that it has the potential to be both. I think we'll know. I think we'll know more on that result on Friday night, whether or not we think we're going there to have.
How much is at stake?
Yeah. I think if QPR nick a point, you know, we'll. And I think QPR can still sneak in, can't they, with two wins themselves? I think their long shot is even more than ours, but I think they could still take points, or at least it may have changed since the last time I looked at the table, to be honest. But I know they could possibly have something to do with it. And, you know, I think it'd be nice if we went into that having Sheffield United drop points, and it would suddenly, the atmosphere would completely change, and probably this podcast would look slightly, you know, outdated by the time it goes to print almost, you know, I mean, Sheffield United drop points. But, the player of the season, I mean, obviously that was sorted out. That could have been a fucking PR disaster. You know, the last at the Den always has something about it, you know. And
end of the season. There's normally a pitch invasion, Michael, at the end of the season, isn't there? Although we do still potentially have to go to Bournemouth with possibly, depending on other results, with something on the table. Looking forward to these final two games, or will you miss Millwall, Michael?
I will miss Millwall, but one thing I have to say, Nick, your lack of faith in Lurch is disturbing. I can't see there being a pitch invasion.
The one-man wall that will hold them back.
Yeah.
Like at a Game of Thrones, Lurch with the Night's Watch on the Colbo Lane wall.
I'm gonna miss Millwall this season. I think it's been up and down, but do you know what, lad? Deadly serious. This time last year, we weren't allowed in football stadiums, or it was
exactly
we've got to take a positive out of that.
I think that's probably why it's felt like it's been such a long season, because we haven't done it for 2 years. And at times this has been an hard watch. And at times you think, why am I fucking... Like, it's almost like being a readjustment to realising that you give away your Saturday to these bunch of 11 paid professionals that have the ability to infuriate you, make you happy, ruin your fucking week, your night, your month.
But that's every season.
That's
every season, Harry. You know, you get to a point.
And less said about Max and Kyle, the better. Boom, boom.
Every season, I get to this point where you think, "Oh, I've had enough Millwall for one season. I'm really looking forward to it." You know, Saturday, you don't have to worry about it on the Saturday. You know, the midweek games where you're dragging yourself out the door when you just want to stay indoors, watch the telly or something. You know, you then after about 7 days of the close season, you think, oh fuck, I wish Millwall was around. I wish we could go back down the Den again. So it normally comes back.
That's normally when Strictly Come Dancing starts again, Nick.
Oh mate, yes. don't. Or MasterChef. I've got to end this loop with MasterChef on.
The worst thing about the summertime for me, and it always is the worst thing, is the constant re-emergence of these same shock jock bullshit merchants that seem to claim they have insider knowledge of the transfer market, which drives me through the fucking world.
Or the people who take one line and think it's an exclusive when they've nicked it off someone else.
Yeah, those type of people. I like the idea of Millwall interested. Interested. They haven't signed anyone. They're interested. Well, we'd all be interested in fucking...
Interested in
mate.
Zinedine Zidane. It's actually quite a short summertime break. I mean, the league season begins on July the 30th, so the warm-up games will be going some weeks before that. Because of the World Cup, when this odd season, we're going to have a break in, I think it's November, when the World Cup takes place, and depending on you know, when the nations are involved in the knockout stages, whenever they go out, then the leagues will start to restart. So anyway, so it's actually a fairly short break, but it does seem quite a long one when you're in the middle of it.
Yeah. I don't think that's going to suit us next season as well, because we tend to start slow, don't we? We never seem to get up. So no. We've sort of had a bad August, September. You know, we get to October and we start picking up a few wins, and we'll be in November and we'll be on our, if we're on a run of some description, you know, typical Millwall is to get on a run and then have it stop by a World Cup or something and take 2 months to get back up to steam. But yeah,
it's going to be an odd tournament, Harry. Isn't it? The whole thing's going to be an odd one. So nothing quite like it before, and hopefully nothing quite like it again. But summertime looms. Achtung, we'll be doing a few more shows yet. We've got Peterborough, then the final game of the season at Bournemouth to cover. Michael, you and me are going to do a grassroots show just to review some of the clubs and places and games we've seen this season, doing the non-league shows, which has been a really nice thing to do. I'm glad that we've done that, and I'm looking forward to continuing that next season, particularly as we just mentioned the World Cup break. It'll be a chance to get to see some of the non-league sides more regularly. There won't be any Millwall for at least a month or so, I think. So be a big chance to give it a bit more coverage next season. So I'll be looking forward to that next week, listeners, sometime. Nick and Neil's history shows will be knocking around during the course of the summertime, Neil Fizzler. So we're gonna be busy, actually. It'll be almost like
we're gonna go and watch some cricket again, Nick.
We're going to watch some cricket. Well, and we're actually going to drag you down to a Speedway meeting down at Kent at some stage during the course of the warm ups, Harry. And we might get to see some cricket as well. And Michael, I might even try and organise a trip to the rugby league at some point. So keep your ear rolls out for that, listeners. But for the moment, chaps, I think we've probably run our course on this show. Just want to say thank you to Michael for taking time out of his day to be on the show.
No problem at all, and thank you listeners for the season. Obviously I'm not on before the Bournemouth game, so thank you for your feedback over the season. It's been much appreciated. I know a lot of people haven't agreed what I've said, but it's nice to hear your thoughts on the socials, so thank you.
Good stuff. And Harry, you've been working today, mate, so I'll let you sort yourself out now. Appreciate you coming on the show today, mate, and we'll talk to you very, very soon.
Yeah, cheers, mate. Thanks for that. And yes, the feedback, as I've said before, you don't have to agree with me, but you still got to listen to me.
That's the essence of podcasting, listeners. Thank you for listening, dear listeners. There's more shows, not the end of the season yet, so I won't go too far with the thank yous.
End of season tournament, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Let's not be too.
You never know. But till the weekend, listeners. Bye for now, and arrivederci, Millwall.
Thank you for listening to Achtung Millwall. If you enjoyed the show, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a cheeky little review. Arrivederci, Millwall. Till next time.
Who do you want to watch?
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.